Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, where the mission is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while providing you with a real education on sex, intimacy, and relationships. You know, the one you never got in school, from your parents, friends, or the internet. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. As a sex therapist for couples, I've empowered thousands of couples around the world to get back on the same page in intimacy using my proprietary Pleasure Keys process. Find out more about that at pleasurekeys.com. Join me here at the Sex Talk Cafe for juicy and provocative conversations with the experts. Let's get down to it. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sex Talk Cafe. I am excited to introduce my guest today, Jessica Falcon. So Jessica is a former lawyer turned mystic. Jessica is an international soul embodiment guide and relationship coach, and she guides you to embody your power, reclaim your sovereignty, and experience true freedom. After leaving the legal profession in 2013 to embark on a spiritual pilgrimage, Jessica experienced an 8-year initiation into divine feminine power. She has identified the core beliefs deeply embedded in the individual and collective psyche that keep us from owning our power, speaking our truth, and liberating our sexuality. Jessica leads retreats, workshops, and online portals of transformation, so you embody your sacred sovereign power and experience freedom in your relationships. She's also the host of the Soul Sovereignty and Sexuality podcast. Jessica, welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe.
Thank you. I'm excited for our deep dive discussion today.
Oh, yes. I cannot wait. And I think that is so cool that you used to be a lawyer and then now you're a mystic. And I'd love to hear about your journey, sort of your transition from that realm, which seems so radically different from the mystic path. However, as someone who has studied, and we're not here to talk about law, but I'm kind of a law geek, I think there's actually a lot of mysticism in law as well. So I don't know if you found that to be the case, but I would love to kind of hear just sort of what your journey and your transition from sort of that very different realm kind of into the spiritual and the mystical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite a long path, but I will give you the short version.
Yes, short version.
That transition. You know, in many ways, it's not that different because I went to law school to do women's rights. I went to law school in large part because I knew that as a woman, if I had a law degree behind my name, people would be more likely to listen to me. And that is unfortunately still true.
Yeah.
And when I went to law school, I had no idea I was going to come out and be a criminal prosecutor. I just really did not ever forecast that, but it was basically an opportunity to get in the courtroom and to fight for quote justice, right? And of course we all have different notions of justice, and my notion of justice now, I say that with quote, because my notion of justice is very different than what it used to be. I have a more divine notion of justice, and at the time it was very much, you did bad, you get punished, you have done wrong, and therefore you should suffer. And I really did come into this life holding that view. I did. I'm not the only one. I mean, it's written in scripture. We are touted that all the time. And that's one of the main beliefs that I have had to really look at within myself. Wow. Because of course, you know, not only was I applying that to others, I was applying it to myself. I'm either punished or I'm rewarded. And that belief and this punishment reward system is very connected to our sexuality. I mean, Think back to the story of Adam and Eve, right? Yeah. You have done bad, you have disobeyed, and therefore you must suffer. And Therefore life is a form of punishment and sexuality is a form of sin, right? So we are so acculturated and conditioned to take these prescribed notions of good and bad, right and wrong, sexuality and sin and evil, and take them in and subconsciously operate according to that, even if it's not our conscious thought or belief, right?
Wow. Yes, and I love how you just like totally, in a nutshell, built that bridge between justice, the legal realm, the sexual realm, and how they're both kind of based on this really fucked up belief system of punishment and reward, black and white kind of thinking, and both are really very much about control in a lot of ways, like kind of keeping that black and white way of thinking. So wow, thank you for that. That was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I really considered myself a very sexually liberated woman until I was really forced to face outside beliefs and my own fears of not being loved in my sexuality and in my power. And that helped me see how much my subconscious mind was the one ruling the day and not my conscious beliefs. I think a lot of women struggle with that, men too, right? We have this conscious belief of like, I'm powerful. I'm just as worthy. I'm equal. And yet our emotional state doesn't necessarily match that. And how we're showing up in relationship doesn't necessarily match that. How we're showing up in the bedroom definitely doesn't usually match that.
Yeah. And this is your specialty, this path of sexual sovereignty. And I think that that word is used a lot. We hear the word sovereignty a lot these days, especially like in the last 5 years. It's really become like a buzzword. And from your perspective and in your work, what is sexual sovereignty and why sovereignty? I don't know why I'm having a hard time saying that word today, sovereignty. What is sovereignty anyway, and especially when it comes to our sexuality and really becoming liberated? What does that actually mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that question. So my definition of sovereignty, I take it back to the ancient root of the word, because I like to bring this ancient wisdom into our modern day lives, because it offers us so much and helps us see how much of the conditioning, right, that has been laid on us for so long. And the root of the word sovereign is actually to sit on one's throne. Mm. And I like to add the throne of our own divinity. And when we sit on the throne of our own divinity, we are king or queen of our own domain. This is not hierarchical power, right? Where you rule over others. You are fully self-possessed. You own you. You are your own authority. You choose for you, you think for you, you act for you, you desire for you. Mm-hmm. And so a fully liberated sexual woman who is in her sexual sovereignty can be incredibly sensual and embodied and sexual, and yet does not want to have sex with you, and yet is very boundaried, and yet will say no when she's a no, and will command through her beingness respect and to be valued, because she doesn't bow down to anybody else, and she doesn't have sex out of duty. She doesn't have sex out of obligation. She doesn't have sex because she just wants to be desired. She doesn't have sex because she's looking for approval. She doesn't have sex because she is afraid of rejection if she doesn't, or afraid of abandonment if she doesn't, right? And these are the kinds of things that we really have to look at, and which we are not sexually sovereign, and which we are not owning our own energy, because sexuality, I mean, there's of course many different definitions of sexuality, but when I think of sexual energy, I think of our life force energy. I think of our, what I call ecstatic life force energy, that flow of life that is constantly moving in and through us. Mm-hmm. And that is something we tap into. That is something that we have to create space for. And we have to activate, because we are not in a society that teaches us how to activate our ecstatic life force energy. And to do that is a coming home to oneself. It's a state of inner union. It is a form of emotional intelligence and emotional mastery, because you can't move energy fluidly in your body if your heart is not wide open and you are not in deep resonance with the emotions running through you and aligning them to your soul truth, right? Yeah. So it's such a journey to come into that.
Yes. And I think what you're speaking to is this idea, not this idea, but the path of sacred sexuality. And a lot of people will ask, what is sacred sexuality? Like, what actually do we, I feel like you just kind of explained it, but I think for people listening, they may have heard that term and they're curious about it, or they think maybe it means something, but I'm curious if you could kind of define, what is sacred sexuality, or what does it mean even to return sex to the domain of the sacred? And in that question, then what do we even mean by sacred, right? There's really like a lot of nuances here, I think, that we could pick apart. But you know, like, what you just described is so beautiful, and there, it's a very different conversation to talk about it that way, in terms of this sacredness and this life force energy and this open heart and moving energy, versus like just sticking something in a hole and having a climax. and rolling over and going to sleep.
Quite frankly, it gets pretty boring over time, right? I mean, if that's all you got, like, we want a little more than that. That could be great. But if it's just limited to that, right, then that's pretty boring after a while. I mean, that's at least I find it to be.
It's one dimensional. I mean, I would get bored with that too after a while. It's very one dimensional, I think, is the way that I would describe that. And very limited. I think that's really the idea. You know, when we hear just the word sex, most people think immediately like genital contact. They're not thinking like energy and like connection to the cosmos and life force and this vibrancy and, you know, lust and desire for life and self-expression and sovereignty. Like those words, for the most people, they don't, their mind doesn't go there when they hear the word sex or even sacred sex.
Yeah, because we've been so conditioned to think of sex as something that is anything but sacred, right? Which is why I love this question, because I'm going to start with like, what is sacred?
Yeah.
Right? So what is sacred? So when we're defining sacred, for me, I think of the word holy, which makes me think of wholeness, which makes me think of completeness, union. Sacred is something that I revere. I don't like the word worship because I think that makes people think of putting something above them. But to revere is to hold as holy, to hold as sacred, to see as something precious and that you love. Words just don't even capture that feeling, that essence. And so for something to be sacred, it is then, okay, so how are we treating that thing that we revere, that we see as sacred, that we see as holy, that we see as divine? How are we treating that, for the example of the body, right? In order to see sex as sacred, we have to see the body as sacred. And the body for me is sacred, not because it's a body. The body is sacred because it contains and is infused by the energy of my soul, which is my divinity. And my body is energy. My body speaks to me. It communicates to me. It houses me. It allows me to experience and taste life. It allows me to be here in form as a divine being, having this experience. And therefore, I want to treat it that way. I don't want to just talk about my body as sacred and then feed it foods I know are going to harm my cells, or talk about my body as being sacred, but then let anybody have it. No, no. That to me, right, this is where we align our ideas with our actions. And so sacred sexuality, to take it further, and again, this is my perception. You may have a different one, and our listeners may have a different one. But sacred sexuality, I've thought about this so much, because often what we're told is sacred sexuality requires a certain kind of partnership or a certain kind of pose or a certain kind of way of being or commitment. And I don't think it requires any of those things. I think sacred sexuality is more about the energy and the essence that we bring to the experience, but that both people have to bring. Because it is a communion. It is, in ancient terms, we would call it holy communion. Communion is to become one with. Communion to me is the form of connection. And so sacred sexuality is that deep, soulful connection. One soul to another, eye to eye, heart to heart, hand to hand, and you merge into that union, that communion, because you recognize the soul within you and you recognize the soul within other, and then you allow that to take precedence. You allow the soul, that intuition, that energy, that love, that channel of divine love that you are. The soul is divine love frequency. You then allow that to permeate you. The other person allows that to permeate them. And then it becomes this communion. And so it cannot be about an act. It cannot be about a position. It cannot be about that. It becomes union. Union.
Well, I think in light of that, I might even add that it may not even involve any touch. I mean, it theoretically could involve no sexual, like genital touch or any touch at all. And even in communion, like there's the opportunity to be in communion with the divine, just in the vertical alignment, like with our inner soul, our soul and the soul of the divine. Like there's that inner union as well. or yes. externally, I don't know what you would call it, the sacred marriage, yes. the internal, yes. the mm-hmm. inner, the outer, and then, you know, there's this inner, outer, and secret, like the three domains of knowing. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to add that in as from my perspective, because we can have this experience whether or not we're with a beloved physical other. Mm-hmm. There can be that mm-hmm. intimacy with spirit as well.
And that is that life force energy, right? To me, that is yeah. life force, because I don't see it right as an act. Like when, and I've studied a lot of Tantra where they talk about this, but I see it as my inner union with every aspect of me, with the truth of who I am, is what activates my ecstatic life force energy, which is my constant love affair with yeah. life, which is my... I could call it a sexual experience. I don't necessarily, I was thinking about this the other night. I'm not somebody who needs to, like, quote, get off or, you know, sex play regularly or sex yeah. pleasure regularly when I'm with a partner, not with a partner. I don't necessarily, quote, need that. I see it as just another form of expression of what I'm experiencing in every yeah. moment, because it's just a, it's a different, I like to channel that energy into everything I do and not limit it to one right. thing.
Yeah. And like coming back to, this is getting really mystical and I love it. I'm going to just roll with like what's coming through my brain. Because union, like when you were saying, like coming into union with, you know, the essence of all that you are, all parts of you, that holy communion, the union within this, we could call it the sacred marriage. Like really coming into that oneness, back into that fullness of expression, non-separation with the divine, the source and the essence of who we are. When you think back in terms of what we would call sin, like in religion, is really just means separation, to separate from. So that feeling of being separate from the divine or somehow not a part of the divine is really like the... That really is all that sin means, right? It's not necessarily like you did that particular act and that was a bad act and that's sin, but sin is really that separation from our divine essence of who we are. And it's interesting to me because I know you've studied a lot of religions, or like you've done religious explorations and studies, I think I read in your bio, correct me if I'm wrong. I have a background in religious studies, academic. That's my bachelor's degree, my undergraduate. So like I can geek out on this stuff all day. But it's interesting how our modern religions have in such a sense created that kind of separation through the subjugation of our sexuality and linked with that our femininity. As we know, the divine feminine has been like eradicated from sort of the modern mainstream expressions of Western religion, and Christianity specifically has really been
very
sort
intentionally.
Of, yeah, very right, because of the power of it. When we're in union like that, there's such a power. We become creators. And it's interesting that in so many ways that is the source of separation for so many people. And how many people, I'm sure you work with a lot of people who come to you who have a lot of religious trauma in their sexuality, or they're really disconnected from their bodies, their sexuality, their sensuality, in part because of the impact that they've had, that negative programming that's come from being sort of steeped in those belief systems in a lot of the religious programming that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, as you said, so the sin piece, I want to touch on that for a second, yeah. because it's such a big piece. And people now would define sex as a sin primarily because of, I would call St. Paul and Augustine. You know, my research shows that they were the really big proponents of that, yeah. mostly Augustine, because prior to St. Augustine, which was nearly 1500 to 1000 years after Genesis was written, he created this whole theory that sex, actually sexual desire, not sex, sexual desire was the sin, not wow. sex itself, sexual desire. And he also said that there was no way to interpret the story of Adam and Eve in Genesis literally, but that this was his theory based on his study of the story. And so I trace that back to Paul. So he used a lot of Paul's writings. Now, Paul is considered the founder of Christianity. Christianity did not exist until Paul basically kind of formed it. Even at the time that he's the, quote, founder, it still wasn't called Christianity. It mm-hmm. took a long time for that to happen. And so It wasn't until 400 years after the death of Jesus, for example, that they codified what we call the New Testament. And there was not agreement as to what sin was. There was not agreement as to even Jesus and his life. There was none of that was agreed to. It became a doctrine 400 years later. And I say this because we're not taught these things. And for me, these opened my eyes and helped me question this even more. And Paul's notion of sin was anything that took us away from God, which was the original Jewish understanding of sin, which was you turn your heart toward God or away from God. And when you turn your heart away from God, you are, quote, in sin. And in many ways, I can relate a lot more to that definition when I take it into my own divinity. When I turn my heart away from my own divinity, I usually am acting out of alignment with the truth of who I am. You could call that sin, right?
Sure.
But that doesn't make me bad. It just means I'm not in alignment with the truth of who I am. And therefore, I'm probably giving my power away. Therefore, I'm probably not choosing for me. Therefore, I'm probably acting in unworthiness, right?
Yes.
And so I'm not in my highest ecstatic alignment in that moment.
I love this, right? Yeah, I'm so vibing with this. And it's such a more useful understanding and definition of the word sin, you know. And this, we're not, this is not like a religious show, but like it's so tied in to what I think is important. I know. And like, you know, what your background is and my background. And I think this is so fun to have this conversation. And so that's such a much more useful way to understand that in terms of turning away from or towards God or our own divinity and being in alignment and being in harmony with life and what's true versus being in disharmony with life and what's true. And, you know, there's a real sense, I think we, most of us know there's something called a conscience. Like all of us kind of have that feeling of kind of knowing when we're slightly off, there's just something that's not quite lining up. And yeah, it's a much more valuable relationship to have with that
word. And it really, these ideas really do affect somebody's ability to be fully sexually liberated because they are held in our wombs, passed down generation to generation, sexual shame, sexual guilt, sexual trauma. And it's also our cultural conditioning that you are either a sexual woman and you have sex with anybody and you're available for the man or whatever. I mean, there's all this for the woman. And if you're sexual, you look this way, you act that way, you wear that thing, you do that thing. And it's all about basically still pleasing your partner, right?
Yeah.
It's we're not talking about sexual liberation in the sense of a woman's ownership of herself. We're saying, oh, now you're sexy and you have sex with whomever and you have no boundaries and suddenly you're sexually liberated. That's not liberation.
No, that's not
another form of enslavement. It is not liberation.
Right.
You're in a box, you're fitting into a mold, and it's still not for you. And I was even thinking about this a lot, you know, Scorpio full moon the night before we're recording, right? We're in Scorpio energy. I'm a Scorpio, sexual energy,
oh, nice.
Death, the mystery, right? And I had this scenario and the situation come up. I was really sitting with of how I myself have separated this. Well, I'll say it this way. When I've been in relationship, and I'm heterosexual, but this could apply to anybody, whether you're heterosexual, homosexual, multi-gen, you know, it doesn't really matter. I think these beliefs are applicable to all of us. I just use the word women because I primarily work with women and I'm a woman, but this applies to everybody. I think women just have a lot more cultural conditioning around sex than men and overall. And how I have often unconsciously, when being, quote, sexual, still almost made it this like game with men of what he wants, what would please him, what would make him happy, or this would look sexual, be sexual, versus just being so open and vulnerable and allowing myself to be fully received as I am without any sort of game, without any sort of show, without any sort of proving, without any sort of act, just pure essence of connection. And how rare that is, and how I've found so many ways I've guarded myself from that. In so many ways I've felt like I needed to do something or act and instead of just trusting that natural impulse within me and to be enough.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Because that is, you know, the essence of feminine radiance is fullness. And when we're able to just soften towards what is in the moment exactly as it is, in that vulnerability, in that type of presence, that is the act of fullness. Like there's nothing that needs to be added or taken away. And you're right, like so much programming is around, you know, do this trick in bed or try that position or, you know, like all these things that take us away from that. And it's really so much simpler than we make it. We make it so much more complicated than it needs to be.
And then you're still in your head, right? If you're trying to do something that you've seen in a book, you've read about, and this is not bad. I mean, it can be a creative exploration, but if it's just bringing you so much in your head that you're disconnected from your body, then you can't relax into it and you can't really receive. And so there can be a creative exploration of let's try this thing. This is juicy. This is exciting. Let's talk about, let's do it, but in a playful way, not in a pressure performance way, right? Anytime we make sex about pressure and performance, we're in our head and we're in our ego and we're not connecting because we're more focused on that thing than we are the actual connection with our own life force and our own soul and the other being and engaging in that intuitively in the moment. And then most people can feel that. You feel a disconnect or you start to get frustrated or you're in your head or you're thinking a lot. And when you're fully embodied, that doesn't happen, you know? So the real trick is getting embodied. I mean, that the body is the key to our power, to our sovereignty, to our sexuality, especially our sexual sovereignty. It is so key that we get in and we connect and we, as you said, right, the fullness is the allowingness of what's there to inform us and to move through us. But in order to do that, we have to open the heart because the heart is what allows us to receive what is there, whether it be within us or in the other person.
Yeah, beautifully said. Well, let's talk about the divine feminine, because that again is, or was, it's not as much of a buzzword lately, but it was for quite a while. And I think, again, there's a lot of misunderstanding around what is that? What does that even mean? And I would really love to hear more about your journey into that realm. And, you know, what does it mean for you? And how does that manifest in your work?
Yeah, I love to talk about the divine feminine because similarly, like we talked about with sexuality, it's so misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I definitely have a unique view of the divine feminine because I'm looking at it from this ancient historical perspective and the path that the goddess has brought me through and that my soul has shown me. So as you read at the beginning, I experienced an 8-year initiation into divine feminine power. And in some ways, it never ends, right? Like, and the initiations keep coming and coming and coming. That was a really potent, long, dark underworld initiation. And,
wow.
And the divine feminine for me is, it's not an image. It's not a concept. It's not wearing a long flowing dress and having long hair and looking a certain way.
That part is so fun, Jessica. Come on.
It's fun, sure. But if you're trying to fit into an image, you get so far away from what the divine feminine actually is, right? It's like when you're doing a ritual and you're performing it from your head, you're doing the opposite of a ritual, right? Which is all about energy and intention. And it's the same thing. Like, oh, I'm going to be in my divine feminine because I have a long flowy dress and long hair and I'm twirling in the grass. And I love to twirl in the grass and I love to wear dresses and I don't have long hair, but right. I love that. But it's because it's the expression of me in connection with the moment and the earth and nature, not because I think this is something I should be doing. In fact, the radiance and the fullness of the feminine, which makes it divine, is that embracing of oneself as divine. It is the embracing of oneself as divine here and now in a body.
Mm.
Not later, not after, not when we die, not when somebody tells us we're worthy of that. It is our own reclamation of our own divinity here in form. And quite frankly, that is the union of the masculine and feminine, right? The awareness, the consciousness of our divinity, masculine, quote, divine masculine, merged with our humanity, our life force, our essence of who we are, our body,
energy.
Feminine, divine, feminine, merged. And so the divine feminine then is the reclamation of our body as holy, of our self as holy, of life and the earth as holy, all of which have been demonized and quite frankly damned and cast out of the sacred for millennia. Precisely because when you reclaim yourself as divine in human form, meaning not I am divine and therefore all emotions are unspiritual and I must elevate above the body and abstain from sex, which is sinful and right, like that a lot of spiritual traditions have been doing for thousands of years as well. Not that. That is not the divine feminine in union with the divine masculine. That's the divine masculine. Great. Great. Right. That can have wonderful benefits for you too, but then you're not experiencing life and you're definitely not having sex. You're definitely not experiencing sexual pleasure because you see desire as sinful. But desire, as St. Paul talked about, you know, a couple thousand years ago, he saw anything that was a desire for life as sinful. Anything that was a desire for life is taking you away from God because he only saw God up above. He did not see God here and now. And the goddess, the goddess is the remembrance of the divine here now in life. And when we can come into that, it's not a concept. It is not a concept. It is not a concept. The divine feminine is not a concept. It is an embodied remembrance.
That's
and
so
experience.
Hot. It's a giant orgasm, everybody.
It's
come
an
on.
Orgasm.
You know, and I want to add to this conversation a little bit here, the you know, masculine and feminine. And I think where so many people get caught up in that conversation is they think gender. They think I'm a man, so I must be masculine. I'm a woman, or I'm a, you know, I've got a yoni, so I must be feminine. And that's not really what we're talking about here in this conversation, divine feminine and divine masculine, because we both have both. It's the yin and the yang. Everybody has access to both. And you could choose one or the other or both or to experience all of them. And so I just want to add that to the conversation. We're not talking about what kind of genitalia you have when we're talking about divine feminine and divine masculine. I think that's an important thing just to add to this, you know, just for anyone out there who's listening, who is maybe not quite understanding what that actually means, feminine and masculine, when we talk about it in these terms anyway.
And I like to compare it to, so you have water, right? Which we would call, say, a river. And let's equate that with the divine feminine. And then you have sand around the river that you could equate with the divine masculine. And if you just have water with no boundary of the sand, you just have a flood. You have chaos. Really, really. I've experienced several floods in my life, and it's very chaotic and it's very destructive. So if you were only in feminine flow without a divine masculine boundary around you, consciousness around you, it's chaos. It's chaos and it's destructive. And if you only have the sand and no water, there's no flow. It's just static. It's just static. Nothing is moving. And so you need that flow of that river. And maybe some people's rivers get bigger and bigger than others, right? But you still have a boundary of that sand holding that river so that it can flow without being destructive. And I think it, for me, that it's helpful to have that visual or that understanding of, ah, okay, so I actually can't cultivate my divine feminine within myself, man or woman, whatever gender you are, until I develop the consciousness that allows me to go into my body to access that, to create more flow in life force. And I say this because my experience working with clients is that when somebody does not have a strong container of consciousness, their body won't actually open up to them fully to be able to receive what is inside.
Yeah. Yeah, that was so beautifully said.
It's so important.
Both aspects, the container and the stuff in the container. You can't fill a container if there's no container to fill, or if there's holes in it.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the, you do retreats and some of your offerings. I'd love to give you a few minutes just to kind of talk about that piece of what you do, because I would love to hear more about it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So in terms of the Divine Feminine, I do have a Divine Feminine retreat in Greece coming up. I actually call it the Sacred Feminine retreat in Greece coming up this fall, which I'm really excited about because I spent about 6 weeks in Europe last fall. And when I was in Delphi, Greece, I was going in part to prepare to lead a retreat and to look at different sites and in part for my own spiritual journey. And when I was in Delphi, which I've had past lives in, I was an oracle in a past life. And when I was there.
I remember you there.
I know, right? Maybe that's where we know each other from.
I was there too.
We talked about being sexual priestesses when we first met. So it's probably Delphi and sexual priestess, huge connection. Actually, when I was in Delphi, a little side note, the biggest piece of healing was sexual healing.
Yeah.
And sexual sovereignty, because there was a lot of wounding around sexuality in Delphi. And so a lot of that, what I've been now doing since I was there in October, is a lot of sexual healing, which then I can take back in a healed state to the land, to grid a new level of consciousness.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really knowing, we already have several spots taken, but there are a few spots left, that the women who were called, this is for women only, this retreat, who were called on this retreat, are going, one, right, to receive the wisdom and the energy and the codes of all of the ancient goddess temples that we're going to. It's very curated, this trip. We're going to ancient temples every single day. And at these temples, I am guiding them to bring up that energy. And I'm doing energetic activations and embodiment practices. But we're also going to activate the grid location so that we can help bring this healed consciousness up into the modern day grid. And so it's to reactivate these temples of the goddess so that we can shift what's happening. We're at a pretty collective point of shift right now, which I think most people recognize.
Yeah, it's a little crazy
so,
right now.
You know, it's a little crazy.
and
the goddess has already risen. Like, she's already risen, but she, you know, she's ready to activate in a deeper way those who are ready. And into this deeper level of embodiment. And that's what that retreat's really about. So that's the retreat in Greece. That's September 27th through October 8th. And all of this is on my website, thepathtosovereignty.com. And then I do divine activation portals where I work one-on-one with people. And that usually includes the Sacred Body Wisdom Foundational Series, which is an online series where people learn how to connect with the wisdom of their bodies so that they can anchor into their soul truth and sovereignty. And I do in-person workshops. I'm actually about to go on a little summer tour on the East Coast, teaching in-person Sacred Body Wisdom workshops all around the East Coast. So I'm excited about that too. So,
and
then a
North
Holy
Sexuality
retreat.
Yeah, come up through North Carolina and say hi to me in the mountains.
I know. I'm going to be in Asheville. Dude, I might not do a workshop in Asheville till September, though. So I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Oh, I'll be in Asheville doing a retreat in September, a workshop in September. So maybe we can meet up when you're up this way. Yeah, that'd be great. Well, it all sounds fabulous. And so your website again, one more time.
PathToSovereignty.com. And you have to spell the E and the I right. Sovereignty is like you were saying.
It's a hard word to spell sometimes.
It's one of those words. You can mix
yeah.
the E and the I.
I love
but
it.
But think about sovereignty. To reign. R-E-I-G-N. To reign.
That helps.
To
sovereignty.
The queen. The king.
I love it. Jessica, is there anything else that maybe we didn't touch on that you'd like to leave our listeners with, and or anything you would like to clarify that we've already touched on?
It's been such a powerful conversation. I've so enjoyed being able to drop in deeply and talk about these things and the multidimensional nature, right, of sexuality, that it's more than just this act. It's a lot of people think something is wrong with them when they're not sexually fulfilled or when they don't have sexual desire or when they hold sexual shame or guilt. And we tend to, right, like individualize these things and make ourselves a problem. And what's coming to me most right now is that that is actually the illusion lie that keeps us separate from our power, because we have all been subject. You are not the only one who holds sexual shame, who's experienced sexual trauma, who feels guilty or obligated or lacks desire. This is a collective problem, and you individually get to heal that, and you get to reclaim your power, and you get to come into new relationship with your body and yourself and your sexuality. And to me, that's the key. And that's what I know I'm so passionate about. And I think that you're so passionate about, is that reclamation that is possible. And I'm not going to say it's an easy path, because it is an underworld, and that you have to go in and look at this quote darkness that you've ingested, right? Mm-hmm. It's in darkness that we've ingested. But it's important to recognize the difference. It's not that we are dark. It's that it's darkness we have ingested. And when we can remember that, it's a lot easier to go in and look at our shadow pieces.
Yeah, that was so beautifully said. And yeah, I thank you so much for being my guest today here on Sex Talk FA. And I hope our listeners will go check you out and perhaps attend one of your workshops or reach out to you for private coaching, because you really have such a depth and breadth of knowledge that's clearly embodied. It really translates just in everything that you brought here today. So thank you so much for being on the show with me today, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing me. Thank you for having me. It's been such a joy and a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. And if you're ready to discover the 3 secrets to deepening connection, enhancing pleasure, and expanding your orgasmic potential, then be sure to grab your copy of the Pleasure Keys ebook at pleasurekeys.com. To learn more about my private coaching, couples retreats, and other offerings, be sure to connect with me at pathwaytopleasure.com or find me on social media at Susan Morgan Taylor. Thank you again so much for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe.